And I just want to take a minute to thank Jerry, our the man that has put this all together for us several years in a row. And well, I was asked to be the host for this morning's speaker, and I didn't know Julia prior to coming here, for her coming here, and I talked to her a couple of times on the phone, and then I got to meet her this Friday afternoon. And Jerry told me, he said, you're going to really enjoy meeting her. She's a wonderful, great person, and I think that you two will hit it off. And that we certainly have done. It's like I've known Julia for a long time. I'm sure that we would have been great friends growing up and probably partied really good together. I've made a really great friend, and I hope to continue our friendship. And I'd like to introduce you to Julia this morning and hear more and have her share her friendship with the rest of us.
Oh, good morning, everybody. My name is Julia Sullivan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm so glad to be here with you this morning. I tried to make a note, a couple of notes, just give everybody to thank, you know, and the list just grows. It continues to grow. So, but thank you to the committee for asking me to be here this morning. It's been so wonderful to meet all the new people that I've met and see some old friends, too. There's a small group right over here to my left this morning, and when I went into the hospitality room, I sat down with them, and I looked at Wayne and Junior, and I said, I don't know what y'all have been drinking, but I want some of that. And Junior looked at me and said, coffee. They look wonderful. I got sober in Georgia. My sobriety date is January the 10th, 1985. But so it's been a while since I've seen them. And they look just wonderful. I currently live in Lafayette, Louisiana, and I have been there since November of 1999. And when Jerry called me and asked me to come over, I said I would love to. I would just be thrilled. It's times like these that I wish I was a joke teller. I was thinking about asking Brookins to come up here and share a joke for me, but that first step is a doozy, so I'm not going to do that. And I've been watching everybody coming up and going off the stage this weekend, and I'm like, I think we might need to put in a, oh, look, there's a step over here. I've been here all weekend. I just now saw the step. Story of my life. How many times this weekend have I gotten on the elevator and gone up? And I was, oh, okay, I didn't look at those arrows. You know, don't you? It's going up, not down, following the directions. But I was just listening to everything that everybody has shared this weekend. I hate to miss anything, you know, when Sarah Jane was talking about, you know, not missing something, you know, or, well, you weren't there. You missed it. You'll never know. I don't want to, you know, miss anything. So I was relating to Brookins when he was talking, and I said, ooh, it's a good thing we never drank together. Because I'm the kind of girl when he'd put that shotgun right there and said, either pull the trigger or put the gun down, Brookins wouldn't have been up here speaking this week. She had not have pulled that trigger. Oh, me. And then Sarah Jane, I was listening to her, and I said, you know, I've listened to quite a few speakers say that they started out in Al-Anon, but they wound up in AA, and I'm not just sure we still might not have a seat for you, Sarah Jane. Oh, my goodness. And then when Paul was sharing last night, I said, oh, my. You know, I would have liked to have been on the back of that motorcycle with him. I was wanting to be where he was. You know, I was just, I think, maybe just a couple of years younger, not quite old enough, you know, to get there and be in on the original Woodstock. But it, you know, it wasn't for lack of wanting. When, you know, when I woke up this morning and I was praying, and I looked at the daily reflections, and, you know, as I shared, sometimes I get on the elevator when it's going the wrong way, and I miss a step. You know, what I did read this morning that I thought was today's reading was from The Best of Bill. And he said, my stability came out of my trying to give, not out of demanding that I receive. And, you know, that's what I'm here to do this morning. I hope it's just to be able to give. You know, I think anytime anybody speaks from a podium, it's my feeling that there's one person in the room that needs to hear exactly what that person has to share, you know. So I don't know what anybody may or may not get this morning, but I know what I receive from being able to be here with y'all. And everybody has truly enriched my life and my sobriety this weekend, so thank you. And I also want to thank Carol and Victor. You know, through the years, it's a result of being able to listen to a lot of speaker tapes. Tapes, you know, before now we have MP3s, CDs, DVDs, downloads, uploads. I'm like, I'm lost. But just carrying the message, you know, and being able to share CDs and people's talks all over the world, you know. And I'm just forever grateful for that. It says, you know, that our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like and what happened and what we're like today. And, you know, so for me, that's what I was like before I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and what happened and what I'm like today. And I was sharing with somebody yesterday, you know, if upbringing or outer circumstances, you know, had anything to do with alcoholism, I wouldn't be here. You know, but it truly is a disease. Neither one of my parents were alcoholic, to my knowledge. It just so happened that later in life, my dad had an opportunity for a business venture, and he bought a liquor store in Cobb County. In Fulton County, and all the surrounding counties were dry. So that business was very prosperous. When I look back at my family history, there has been a lot of tragic things that have happened. And, you know, in our big book, it talks about tragic and tragedies. And that's not the case today for me, but when I look at some of the things that have happened, there's been rampant suicides on all sides of my family, you know, and there was alcoholism in years previous, you know. But I just, a little bit of when I was younger, and I think it's, you know, what formed all these false belief systems, but when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous that I really realized that my whole life has been operated out of fear, you know, self-centered, consuming fear for as long as I can remember. You know, my dad actually died about 3 weeks before my second birthday, and my father committed suicide. And he went in the bathroom. We were all at home, my mother, myself, and my sister, and the woman who was our housekeeper. And we were all there, and he went in the bathroom, and he put a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. And my mother, you know, went back and found him. And I can't imagine, you know, the effect, how that, what that must have done to her. But, you know, she picked right up and took over everything. And so there she was left to raise a 2-year-old, not quite 2-year-old, and a 13-year-old. Now, if you do the math there, 13 and 2, and this was like 1959, okay? I don't think I was a planned pregnancy. Not back in those days, okay? My mom was 35 when I was born, so, you know, that was kind of late in life at that time. But anyways, so here she was. You know, she had 2 children and a business to run and a husband that was no longer there. And in just a few short years, one of my earliest memories was I woke up one morning. I used to sleep in the bed with my mom. And there was all this thrashing in the bed, and I opened my eyes, and her arms and legs were flying everywhere, and her eyes were rolling back in her head, and I was like, I jumped up, and I was like, Mama, Mama, get up, what's wrong? And all this motion kept going on, and her mouth was making funny sounds, and I ran into my sister's bedroom, okay? My sister was probably about 16 or 17, and I'm like, get up. Mama's dying. Something's wrong. And she thought I was trying to get her up. It was a Saturday morning. I used to want her to get up and watch cartoons with me. She's like, get out of here. Go away. Go on. Well, I ran back to the bedroom. Well, I ran back in there, and I started screaming, okay? And my sister jumped up and came in. Well, what was happening was my mom was having a horrible seizure, okay? And it turned out she was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And the first tumor that they took out of her head was like the size of a grapefruit. I mean, it was just all in there, okay? I just can't really explain that, but it was in there. But so the point I'd like to make here or share is, you know, that terror that instilled in me, seeing her have that seizure was just like nothing. Well, I don't have to explain it to anybody. If you're alcoholic, you understand a little bit about fear, you know, and terror, bewilderment, frustration. And so that started right there. You know, anytime anything was going on, I always had this fear in the back of my brain about my mother. You know, what if Mama dies? You know, what's going to happen to me? It wasn't necessarily so much that I was concerned about Mama, but what's going to happen to Julia? You know, what happens to me if something happens to her? But anyway, they took that first tumor out, and she bounced back real quick, and, you know, things started to go on. But now what happened was I had been told that my father had died of a heart attack, okay? I did not know what had happened. And when I was about 10 years old, my mom, she had this beautiful red wallet, and I just loved that wallet. I always wanted that wallet. And she's like, well, one of these days, you know, you can have that wallet. And so she gave me that wallet. I was about 10 years old, and she had taken everything out of that wallet, she thought. And I was going through, and I was putting some things in that wallet, and way back in one of these compartments, there's this little bitty newspaper article all folded up. And I pulled this newspaper article out, and I opened it up, and I started reading it, and it says, William Joseph Perry found dead, gun by side. And I was like, wait a minute. And I, you know, read the article, the newspaper article about my father's death and his obituary. I have no idea why my mom had saved But she had. Well, I flew apart right then. I got mad. I went and I confronted her. She started crying. And she said, you know, I just felt like that you had so much on you already. You know, they were going to tell you when you were older what had happened to your father. Well, you know, I have been lying my entire life. I am a habitual liar. I come by it naturally. You know, you hear the expression, know how to tell if an alcoholic's lying, his lips are moving. That's me. But you know, I was forming some ideas and some opinions and things that I was going to operate on for years, you know. And one of the things was, you know, that you never tell the truth, you know. You never tell the truth. I was born with a level of defiance and rebellion that seems to match no other. You know, I've talked to several alcoholics that, you know, can identify with that. This flashed into my brain this morning, and I don't know why I hadn't had this thought in years. I was thinking about, we were at someone's house, and I was playing with this man's little boy, and something did not go right. We were playing, and I remember they have these, like this set where you take the shapes and you pound them in with a hammer, you know, like circle, square. And we were doing something. Something did not go right, and that little boy made me mad. Now, I don't remember his name or anything, but I remember I picked that hammer up, and I hit him square in the forehead. Wham! Well, let me tell you what. He got a big pump knot. It looked like an Easter egg on his forehead. He went screaming out into the living room. Everybody comes back there, and he said, Julia hit me with the hammer. My mother looked at me, Julia, why did you hit him with? I didn't hit him with that hammer. Julia, Mom, I didn't hit him with that. I did not hit him. You cannot beat the truth out of me, okay? It does not matter. You know, when I am afraid and backed in a corner, a lie will come out of my mouth just like that. You know, it never fails. When, you know, I just think about those different things and that defiance, you know. But after that with my mom and my dad, that constant fear that just ate at me. My sister and I, there's so many years between us, it was almost kind of like being an only child. She married when she was 18 and moved out, and my mom and I were left there. And the housekeeper, her name was Ollie. And, you know, it was my mother and Ollie and myself. And we took care of my mother, and her health was going to decline rapidly because they thought after they took that first tumor out that they had gotten everything, but they didn't. And it kept coming back, you know, and so she kept having to have more surgeries. And so what happened as a result of those tumors and things, we moved back to her hometown. We moved in, she remodeled her mom's home, and we moved in there. And, you know, we started life there. But she became an invalid after her last surgery, okay? And I was probably about 11 years old, and we really just physically, you know, took care of her. And it was, you know, on one of those weekends, my very first experience with alcohol, the one that changed my entire life, I was 11 years old, and I had come to Atlanta to visit my sister and her husband. And my grandmother had put me on a Greyhound bus, and I came to Atlanta. My sister picked me up, and I went to their apartment. And that weekend, there was a party. There was a big party. And there were a lot of people, and there was a lot of drinking. Now, I don't know about anybody else in this room that can be persistent. I am like water dripping on a rock when I want something. Drip. I will not give up. Well, at this party, everybody was drinking, and I went to my sister. I said, I want something to drink. She said, absolutely not. And I said, oh, come on, you know, just one. Just let me have just one. And she said, absolutely. Well, I continued. Well, finally she said, all right, here, you can have one drink, but that's it, and go back to the back of the house. I said, okay. I have had a lot of firsts in my life that I do not remember, okay? But for some reason, this first drink is imprinted on my mind, clear as a bell. And she gave me a big, tall can of Pabst Blue Ribbon, 16-ounce Pabst Blue Ribbon. And I just walked straight back to the bathroom, and I shut the door, and I popped the top on that PBR. And I started to drink that. And that went down, and I was kind of like, you know, now I'm just a little slip of a thing at 11, okay, you know. And it wasn't just automatic fireworks, but I start to drink a little bit more of that, and I'm like, And all of a sudden, in just a few minutes, I'm kind of like, man. Okay. So I just kind of shot back out there to the kitchen and got myself another PBR and ran back there to the bathroom. And I cracked the top on that PBR and I put that down. Well, when I was growing up, they used to have little fairs, you know, the circus and the fair when it would come to town. And I loved the circus. I loved the fair, you know. And there used to be a ride. It was called the Tilt-A-Whirl. And, okay, so there's some Tilt-A-Whirl people in the room. That's good. I don't have to explain the Tilt-A-Whirl ride. But I used to love that ride, okay? And if you got a really good little bucket that you were sitting in, it spun extra fast, and you got this woo feeling. Well, you know, all of a sudden, I'm in the bathroom, and I'm like, woo, I'm feeling like I'm on the Tilt-A-Whirl. And the next thing that happens is I just projectile puke everywhere and I pass out. End of story, nothing glamorous. And I came to, you know, in the middle of the night. I was in the bed, my sister and her husband. I mean, everybody was just asleep. I thought, what am I doing in here? I jumped up, ran and got in my bed. I don't know what happened, you know. But I can't, you know, the next morning I got up. I didn't say anything about the night before, and neither did anybody else. Well, when she was taking me to the bus station at the end of that weekend, she just said, Julia, she said, you don't say a word to Mama about anything that went on here this weekend. I said, about what that went on here this weekend? She said, okay, all right. You know, again, just don't talk about this, you know, don't say anything about it. You know, I heard somebody sharing this weekend, I think it was Nancy, about little elephants having big ears and, you know, just hearing things, but, not discussing them, you know, don't talk about them. My grandmother was real big about that. We don't know. Everything's fine here, you know. We're not going to talk about that. But you know what? When I had that experience, I just loved that. Bill talks in the book about, you know, that some of us, you know, cross that invisible line. There was no crossing over for me. I mean, right from the get-go, I loved that. I wanted to experience that again as soon as I could. Well, naturally, you know, I used to say that I was a daily drinker from the age of 11, but that wasn't possible. You know, I was living in Carrollton, Georgia. It was 1968. You know, I couldn't just ride my bicycle into town and buy beer. But, you know, my next experience with alcohol was 2 years later when my mom died. And she died as a result of that tumor, and some friends had come over to pick me up, and we went to their house and to her house, and her parents had to leave that night. And I was crying. I was horribly upset. You know, I have a bit of a church background, you know, religious, raised with this, I call the, you know, the my concept of the Jesus Christ principle, you know, and that if you're just a good girl and you believe, then everything will be all right. You know, you'll go to heaven, you've got a one-way ticket, and you're there. And if not, you're going to hell. And, you know, my grandmother just used to think that I just never was quite where I needed to be, so she always felt it was important to let me know that she thought I was going to hell in no uncertain terms. And, you know, she used to talk to me about, you know, well, if you think something, you know, it's just as bad as doing it to you. And I thought, well, you know what? If I'm going anyways, let's just proceed and have a good time and go first class. But, you know, so when my mom died, you know, I had really held to that belief that, like, there was going to be some kind of transformation that was going to happen and she was going to be okay. You know, because really the bottom line is, if she dies, what's going to happen to me? You know, where will I be? You know, and so when she died, I really, whatever belief system I had, I just put that away. I just said, that doesn't work. That, you know, that's a lie. That's, none of that's true. And when I was at my girlfriend's that night, her parents had to leave. Something came up, and I was crying. I was mad. And, you know, I never will forget, Marion looked at me, and she said, maybe if we took a drink, you'd feel better. I said, oh, Marion, I think you're right. Now, I don't know. This was, listen. Anyways, it was 1970. We went back to her parents' bedroom closet, and I've wondered about this often through the years. My girlfriends at that time, most of their parents drank, but all of their liquor supplies were in their bedroom closet. Now, I don't know if they were closet drinkers or alcoholics and just trying to hide it, or that's just where they kept it or what, but you know what? We went back to the closet that night and we poured a drink. I don't remember what it was, you know, but that first drink, I don't know if it was vodka, bourbon, what, but I do know this. I do know after that first drink, and boy, you know, with alcohol, you can just feel that burn. I mean, straight down and that explosion and right through my veins, you know, and I was like, yes, yes. And when I had that drink, it just all of a sudden everything was all right. You know, I was all right and all my outer circumstances were all right. It didn't matter that my mom had just died. It just, everything, it didn't matter. I was okay. And, you know, we got pretty high drinking, and it just so happened her sister came in early and took one look at us, and she said, Marion, she said, you girls get in the bed. Mama and Daddy are about 2 miles down the road behind me, and she said, I don't want to hear a word out of y'all. For some reason, we said, okay, and we got in the bed. But, you know, right then and there at that age was really where my serious drinking started, because after that, I went through a series of girls' boarding schools. And once again, I learned about not telling the truth and how important it was to protect myself at all costs. And my mother had a will set up and provisions made for me for when I died. And, you know, I have another family member that was in the middle of her active alcoholism at the time. And that will was declared null and void, and all bets were off. And my sister was in the middle of her drinking, and she said, I tell you what, she said, if you'll make me your legal guardian, if you'll sign this paperwork, I think we can get a couple of things worked out, okay? And so she wanted to have control of some things. And, you know, I understand that very well today. But, you know, one of the promises was if I made her my guardian was that I would not have to go away to boarding school. And I signed the paperwork, and I wound up going off to boarding school anyways. And, you know, what happened at boarding school, this was the early 70s, and a lot of times at boarding schools where they have girls' boarding schools, they have boys' boarding schools or military academies, they call them. But really, I think they're just full of young men who have drinking problems and problems. And you know what, when I started at that first school and my first dance I went to, I was introduced, my girlfriends and I were introduced to a group of young men. And they introduced us to a lot of other things other than alcohol, you know. And I've done a boatload of other things along with my drinking, you know. But my drinking, I am an alcoholic beyond a shadow of a doubt. You know, I have that physical allergy that is coupled with that mental obsession. And once I ever put that first drink in, I am gone. I am off to the races. But you know what? It the ball started rolling right there. And once again, you know, I hadn't been in that school 2 weeks, and I was caught. There were 7 freshmen, and 6 of us were caught drinking. And they brought us in to interrogate all of us, and they said, if you'll just tell the truth, you won't get in any trouble. Well, you know what? For some reason, I believed them. I told the truth. One of the few times I remember telling the truth. And you know what? They suspended all of us. Well, you know, really the rule was for if you were caught drinking or using any drugs, you were to be expelled and never to be allowed to return to the school. Well, you know, the bottom line was that the school could not afford to lose all that tuition. So the school rules were rewritten. And we were suspended for a semester and allowed to return the following semester. Now, I had no one that was willing to come and get me. They hospitalized me in an infirmary. And my sister refused to come and get me. Her husband had forbid her, said, you will not go and get her. She will not come here, and she will not interfere with our lifestyle. You know, they were in the middle. They were on their own road. And what happened was I had a math teacher at that school, and she and her husband signed for me, set up an arrangement with my sister, and came and got me out of that infirmary and brought me into their home. Y'all, my life has been filled with people who have tried to help me from day one, and I never was willing to receive any help. You know, I always wanted to do things my way at all costs. Well, you know, needless to say, I wound up getting suspended from that same school 3 times. And, you know, the last time they said, we're sorry, you know, we just cannot bend the rules anymore. And once I left there, I had a couple of journeys to a couple of other boarding schools, same thing, alcohol and drugs. And they would always say, you know, she's such a bright girl. You know, she's got such promise. But she just seems to be in trouble constantly. My name was just synonymous, you know, with being in trouble. It was alcoholism, you know. And they started sending me to psychiatrists at an early age. You know, I learned how to interview psychiatrists. Oh, my. Laughter is identification. So I know there's some other people that have been in here that have been interviewing psychiatrists. But, you know, I drank all I could, as hard as I could, for as long as I could. Bill talks about in here, you know, when he's sharing in his story about gradually things got worse, you know, my whole life, you know, my short career of drinking. It's only in Alcoholics Anonymous you hear somebody refer to their drinking as a career. But my, you know, was so short-lived. Everything went downhill rapidly for me. There are some people that seem to have hardly any consequences for their drinking. Then there are those of us who have numerous consequences for their drinking. I cannot tell you how many... excuse me, how many DUIs I have had, how many times I have gotten underneath the wheel of a car driving in blackouts. I'm a big blackout drinker. You know, I start out just stopping off. I'm just, honest to God, stopping. I'm just going to have a couple. I never think I'm stopping for just one. I'm just going to stop for just a couple, and then I'm going home. That's really what I believe in my heart. I never think... go stop and have a couple and come out of a blackout in the New Orleans French Quarter. I'm just going to stop and have a couple of drinks and lose the children, you know. I'm just going to stop and have a couple of drinks and fill in the blank. You know, you get the picture. But that's what happens to me. But I started having consequences early on. I think about, you know, the tornado, being the tornado that it talks about. The words and the language that Bill uses in this big book and at that time, you know, are so, so specific. And I think about when tornadoes, when they touch down, how everything is just disintegrated right there, you know, and how I was literally a tornado roaring through everyone's life. I was just heartbreaking, the damage that I caused to people. I think Paul was talking last night, you know, about his parents and about his father and leaving and being gone for a year, you know, and that worry and just heart sickness, you know, that people had over me. You know, the woman that was our housekeeper, I am forever indebted to that woman because, you know, I know today beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is a God and that he is very personal to me and he has looked after me from before I came into here. You know, he has had his hand on me the entire way. You know, I have never been left to my own devices, even though I felt that way many times. You know, I just seem to be a magnet for trouble. towards the end of my drinking, people were saying, "Julia, you cannot go with us. Or if you go with us, you cannot drink." Now, these are my good alcoholic buddies. They're saying, "You cannot be drinking and come with us. We cannot go to jail. You know, you just get us into too much trouble every single time." You know, it got to where I was being frisked when I was going out with my friends to see if I had alcohol. You know, I can remember taping pint bottles to the insides of my thighs, so when I got wherever I was going, I just needed to have just a little sip, I could not operate without alcohol. I had to have alcohol in my body at all times. You know, it was the last thing that happened to me at night before I passed out, put my head on the pillow, and when my eyes opened, it was the first thing I reached for in the morning. You know, where it talks about when it says the alcoholic becomes, I'm not able to differentiate the true from the false, and that their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I didn't know that was not normal. You know, people were telling me that I had a problem. But, you know, I did not understand why when I'm getting up in the morning and I'm trying to take a drink and I am shaking so bad that I spill half of what's in the glass before I can get it to my mouth and then I throw it up, that, like, what is wrong with my stomach? You know, I've got stomach problems. You know, people, I go to doctors and let them take out organs before I admit that I have a problem with alcohol, okay? Do you drink? Oh, yeah, I do. Just a couple, you know. Not a couple of quarts every night, I'm not telling them, just a couple. Oh, my stars. You know, I had numerous marriages. I won't even call them relationships. You know, just all kinds of interactions with people from all walks of life throughout my drinking, okay? You know, I wound up in places with people doing things that I never imagined that I would be doing, okay? You know, my family just were heartbroken, the ones that were left. They were like, they would go for months on end and not know where I was, you know. I'm one of these people, currently, I say my current husband, I like to keep him on his toes. My current husband, we both are holding records. This is our longest marriage for either one of us to the same person with no time off for bad behavior. And we have... been married 12 years. Oh my, that Sarah Jane, I just caught what you had. I was going somewhere with that, and that just shot. It just shot right out of my brain. Marriages, oh my. But you know, everything that happened, it was all bringing me here to y'all. The way that I wound up in here was the result of one of my last, what I hope is my last DUI. And on my last DUI, I was sentenced to go to a drunk driving school of sorts. And what they did was they showed these films on people having accidents and all these terrible things happening to them. And, you know, trying to scare you. You know, you can scare an alcoholic for about 3 minutes. But you know what happened was they had somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous that came in and shared and talked there. And I do not remember who it was. It was a man. And I don't remember his name or where he was from exactly. But I remembered everything that he was sharing. And I was thinking, And, you know, I knew for a long time that my drinking was not like other people's drinking, okay? I mean, that was not rocket science. But I just, you know, I just always overshot my mark. I never knew how to stay within this limit. You know, it wasn't that I was doing that on purpose. Well, you know, I was still to go on drinking after this, but, you know, I had everything that person had shared in my head. And, you know, they also gave out a test of questions, John Hopkins questions. And I think at the time, I forget, I want to say that there were 26 questions. I really don't remember how many they were, but I do remember my answers to those questions to myself. Now, when they passed this out, they said, now, we want you to be honest here and share, you know, tell exactly, answer these questions. Yes, they were all yes or no. And, you know, just these little questions like, do you ever drink extra before going to a function or a party? Have you ever missed work due to your drinking? Have you ever had episodes you cannot recall due to your drinking? Have you ever come to an unusual place? You know, you get the picture. And I'm just checking off no, 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 no to everything because, you know, I'm like, I'm not telling the truth. Well, you know, I'm not totally dumb. I said, well, you know, I'm in here for a DUI. I better answer yes to one or two of these questions or they're going to know something's up. So I answered yes to two, just two. And everybody collected up the paperwork, you know, and they said, okay, well, we want to thank y'all. And they were looking through everything. They said, we appreciate y'all being honest. I don't know if there was any other alcoholics in that room besides me, but, you know, there was a bunch of other people with DUIs, although that does not make us alcoholics. But anyway, they said, you know, we just want to share with you, if you've answered yes to one of these questions, you might have a problem with alcohol. They said, if you have answered yes to two or more of these questions, you have a problem with alcohol and you might be alcoholic and want to seek help. Oh, my Lord, I said, God, only two did I answer yes to, and they are telling me I am alcoholic. Okay, well, you know, I'm glad that, you know, nobody could see my paper, but I knew, you know, I knew. And, you know, I went out of there. I learned some other things in that course, like how to control drinking. I don't know if anybody in here has ever tried controlled drinking. Dear God. I tried that for 15 minutes because they've given you a little formula like for the men and women. You know, if a man is 6 feet tall and he weighs 250 pounds and he takes 2 ounces of alcohol, how long it takes for that to, you know, process through your body. And I sat down with my gallon of wine and I got the calculator out and I was punching in my weight and the and, you know, I'm just not real good with math. And I said, I'm not going to worry about that. And, you know, off I went. And, you know, when I just said that about math, you know, I'm not a schoolgirl, and here I come back to my husband and in our 12 years, somebody, I think Carol and Victor had given me some CDs of a couple, and they handed them to me, and they handed me the woman's and the husband's, and they handed me hers, and they said, PhD, and they handed me his, and they said, GED. And I said, that's me! My husband, like, has some, you know, fancy letters in front of his name, like D-R period. I'm like, oh, mine has G-E-D after it. I was not a schoolgirl. You know, I had more important things to do, like drink. I was never there. I was never able to be present in class, you know, and I always felt dumb, stupid, and less than, and that I could not learn, you know. And since being an Alcoholics Anonymous, I've found out that that's totally true. But, you know, to this day, I just have a real aversion to classrooms. It's like people like, well, you could go back to school. I'm like, oh, no, you can go back to school. I have the piece of paper. I have no interest in re-entering that classroom setting. That's just me. There are a lot of other things that I have learned and, you know, been taught through the years. But that returning to school was not one. And, you know, it's just recently that I heard a speaker share about that. And I had felt, you know, almost like that there was something wrong with me because I did not have that desire, you know, to go back to school. And when she said from the podium, you know, I'm here to tell you that everybody else I've been up here with has a PhD, she said, except me. She said, that's okay. You know, she said, but I had to look at that, you know. And that's the way it, you know, it is for me today. But, you know, opposites do definitely attract. But anyways, as a result of that test, you know, I went back out and was trying that controlled drinking. And it wasn't long after that that I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way I got to you people is, oh my, I had, I was living with a man. He was alcoholic. Can you imagine that? And he was a little violent, you know. I seemed to be, like, attracted to wild, crazy, violent, no good men when I'm drinking. Because I'm a wild, crazy, violent, no good woman when I'm drinking, okay? And but I was living with this fella, and I went out, I was given the keys to the car to go to the store, and I was gone for a gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, and a box of Winston's. This was in 1984. And I went to the store, and I bought a box of Winston's and a six-pack of Tall Millers. And 4 days later, I'm coming out of a blackout, and I'm torn up from the floor up. And both my eyes are blacked, and I'm just skin up, and I'm thinking, And I'm starting to piece some things together, and I think, oh, boy, I'm in trouble. And I said, what am I going to do? You know, I could not go home. I knew what was waiting, what would be waiting at home. Well, you know, alcoholics are pretty resourceful about having plans. And I said, I'll go to my sister's. She'll help me figure out a plan. My sister had come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had been sober for 7 years. My sister had left Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not know that at that moment, okay? But I went to her house, and I knocked on the door. And I never will forget, the door opened, and her eyes got really big, and she was looking at me, and she said, hey. And I said, hey. She said, what are you doing? And I said, I need to talk to you for a minute. You know, I was smoking that Winston, I'm drinking a beer. She said, well, come on in. And I said, okay. And there was a man sitting in her living room. I thought, oh, great. And so I walk into the living room, and, you know, as I'm going in, and he's behind her, she runs around behind his chair. And she's, like, jumping up and down and these hand signals, and she says, Julia, I want to introduce you to somebody. She said, I want you to meet Gil. She said, Gil is from AA. And she's and like pointing beer. She said, Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, oh, okay. And I took my beer and I sort of set my beer down. I said, hey, Gil, how you doing? Good to meet you. He said, Julia, he said, sweetheart, I'm doing good. How are you? I said, I am great. I thought, oh, boy. The only thing I really know to say is, you know, this is my story, and I try not to, you know, share any of my sister's story. But what had happened is she had been in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had gone back out, and I did not know that yet. But she had gotten two sponsors, and she had a woman. Her name was Betty, and she had Gil. And Gil had been, like, in the Army. And I apologize, y'all, I'm not good with ranks and things like that, but he was, like, president of the Army, okay? I mean, he was big muckety-muck, okay? Like, Colonel General or General Colonel or something. Like, anyways, he was, like, a decorated and... I thought he wasn't sitting there in uniform or anything. But anyways, my sister says, hey, you know what? I got to go get some Coke. I'll be right back. It was something. She took off. I thought, oh, God. And she left me here with this man from AA. And I'm like thinking, oh, my Lord. I'm nervous. I need more to drink, you know. I'm like, oh, excuse me, Gil. That's fine, Julia. I said, is it bothering you if I drink? Oh, no, go right ahead. Well, I ran out to the car and got my cooler and brought it. I said to myself, oh, Myrna Louise. So I sat down and, you know, and I opened another beer and we started talking. And he was, you know, just asking me some questions about myself. You know, it talks about, in our book, it tells us about working with others, you know, and the things that we do and, you know, what we ask. And he started qualifying himself to me, you know, and I started seeing, he started showing me that he knew all about the drinking game, okay? I'm like, huh. And, you know, he was telling me some real personal information, like, that I would not have told anybody, okay, in the way that he was drinking and what he used to do. And I remember one little snip in there, something about, you know, that at one time he had, like, had to throw up in a bowl and save that because, you know, that he was down to his last drink and he didn't have any more money and he knew that drink was going to be coming back up and he had to throw it in that bowl and catch it because he's going to have to, you know, re-swallow it. And I'm like, oh, but, you know, I thought, that's good information to know. You know, you might want to, you never know when you're going to be that out of alcohol. You know, I'm like, yeah, recycle. I'm a big recycler. I like that y'all put your lanyards up there, you know. But, so, you know, just sharing things, he just, you know, qualifying himself. And I saw he knew what he was talking about. Long story short, he, the more he talked, the more I listened, and the more I identified. It's that language of the heart. It's that identification. You know, it's what happens when one alcoholic sits down with another. You know, I mean, this is wonderful this weekend, and that we all get to come together and be here together. I don't know if there's anybody in here that's new, or, you know, if this is your first month or your first year, but, you know, this is just kind of like icing on the cake. You know, it's really, it's every day what's going on when we're not sitting, you know, in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but, and, you know, going into treatment centers and jails and, you know, just what we read, you know, for the alcoholic that's still sick and suffering, you know. It's about when I sit down to share one-on-one about what really happened to me, you know, when I really disclose with these women what I did and the bottoms I went to and what I hit, you know, in my... deepest, darkest hours. But anyways, he got to a point, and I was just crying, and I never will forget. He looked at me, and he said, Julia, he said, do you think that you might have a problem with alcohol? And I took a deep breath, and I said, yes. Yes, Gil, I think I have a problem with alcohol. And the next very important question that he asked me was, Julia, do you want any help with your problem with alcohol? And to this day, I always, anytime, you know, I think of that, I just get cold chills, because when I said, yes, Gil, I want some help, I need some help, something came into that room. And it's a power and a presence that I had never experienced before. And it just, I just call it like this blanket of okay. And it just went whoosh, and it just covered me up. And I just knew right at that moment that I was going to be all right somehow, some kind of way. Now, I did not stop drinking right at that moment, okay? About that time, my sister had come back, and he said, she came in, and he said, Joanne, he said, get me a phone book. And she's like, okay, and she ran and got the Atlanta phone book. It was a big old phone book, and he throws it open, and or it's the Yellow Pages, and he starts making calls. He's calling places, and he's asking me questions about my drinking and about, you know, using drugs and just all these questions. And some of them I'm giving him about this much truth, and some of them I'm giving him about this much truth, and some of them I'm just plain lying about, okay? But he said, he made a few phone calls, and I kept listening to all this, and I said, Gil, I said, who are you calling? Well, what are you doing? He said, Julia, I'm calling some treatment centers. I said, treatment centers? He said, yeah. I said, for what? He said, for you. I said, for me? He said, yeah. I said, why? He said, well, you said you wanted some help. And I thought, oh, Lord, I didn't mean right this minute. And he said, well, yeah, you know, we want to get you in somewhere right now. And I thought, oh, dear Lord. Well, you know what? We get exactly what we need when we need it. But what happened as a result of that is I went into an outpatient treatment program. And, y'all, I'm just sorry. I'm here to say that I am the poster person for, if it can be done wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous and you stay sober, this girl is it, okay? Now, do not follow my directions, what I did at first. I did everything backwards. I honestly did. But they took me to treatment that next morning, my sister and her boyfriend, and they were driving me over there. And my sister was like, you okay? You okay? And I was like, yeah, I was okay. Now, I wasn't drinking. I did, you know, that night, I didn't have anything else to drink. They're smoking pot. They're smoking pot, taking me, here, do you want to smoke? I said, no, I don't want to smoke a joint. I'm like, you're taking me to a treatment center. I was thinking, like, they're probably going to be, like, marijuana detectors or something up there, like, that these bells and whistles would be, I didn't know what was going to happen. And so we get to this place, and she takes me in, and we go in, and we sit down, and they start filling out all these questions, and after a few minutes, she says, well, I'll see you. I said, see ya? Where are you going? She said, oh, they're going to take good care of you, honey. I'll be back and pick you up this afternoon. I said, oh, my stars. And that's where I started. Now, what happened as a result of that was, they started, I never right away, I didn't see. They had the steps and the traditions, like in another room of that treatment center. And it was like, in to go in there, I would get up in the morning and get dressed and drive over there and go and spend the day and leave in the afternoon and go back home. And they were talking to us about Alcoholics Anonymous, and y'all are going to be going to Alcoholics Anonymous and that kind of thing. I was like, okay, all right, you know, and taking notes. And so they asked me if I would be willing to talk to somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, oh, yeah, sure, sure. You know, I don't do anything they ask me. And so they said, well, we're going to have this woman come in and talk to you. And I said, okay, all right. And they send in this little woman that comes in to meet me, and she's small. You know, she's like this. And, you know, dynamite comes in small packages. And she's just a little bitty thing, and that personality of hers is 12 feet tall. And she comes in there, and she is smoking like a chimney, brother. This is Becky, you know, you could smoke her. She's smoking, we're sitting there smoking. And she's smoking like a chimney, and she is cussing like a sailor, and I see that she's got a little shoulder holster, like right here. So she's carrying a gun. I'm like thinking, I said, you're from AA? Damn straight, kid. And now, this is just my perception, okay? This is what I remember, okay? She might tell you possibly a different story. I don't know. But you know what? I fell in love right at that very moment because I had all kinds of preconceived ideas about what people who didn't drink might be like, you know, and that you would have to be good and you would have to do things a certain way and that you would like be just, like some kind of holy roller miserable person, you know, and nothing could have been further from the truth, you know. Now, that's not exactly how I 12-step people today. You know, I don't show up with my gun brandished in my hand, although there are some that do need that. I'll just share that with you. You will sit down and no. But you know what? She asked me if I'd be willing to meet her at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, yes, ma'am. And she gave me the directions, and she told me where it would be and when to meet her. And she and her husband both were in AA. And so I showed up, and there were all these cars in the parking lot. I'm like, oh, my God. I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm too nervous. I need a drink. This is AA, Drew. They'll know if you go in there drink. You can't do that. You can't go. And I mean, it was a turning point. You know, drink, yes. No. Just go inside. You know, like 7:59, I shoot in the door. You know, she's right there. There's all these people. Hey, come on in here. You know, oh, take me up on the front row. You know, oh, my God. And, you know, if anybody knew, put your hand up. Put your hand up. I'm thinking, oh, let me out of here. And, you know, I'm thinking, as soon as this is over, I'm out of here. You know, I am to the door. As soon as the meeting was over, no, what happened? Swarm. You know, I'm surrounded. I'm thinking, oh, I am not getting out of here. You know? And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous that night. I was terrified, but I fell in love. And, you know, they started walking me into Alcoholics Anonymous that very first night, she and her husband both. Now, you know what? I have made some wonderful friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think about all the people from that night and what has happened to me from there until here. And, you know, I have a hearing disorder. And I am not always able to hear what it is that you say. You tell me one thing, and I hear something completely different. She was exactly the sponsor that I needed just for that moment, okay? If anybody else had walked into that room to see me that day, I just feel sure I would not be standing here today with y'all. But so what happened to me was that I got on a merry-go-round in Alcoholics Anonymous. I worked the steps with her to the best of my ability, and what happened was I started what's known, I believe, now classically as the two-step, 1 and 12. You know, 1 and 12. And really, I feel like I was just a train wreck, you know, for a lot of years. I was just not drinking and going to meetings and working the steps to the best of my ability outside. if that makes any sense to you, okay? Now, I rocked along for a long time. I think that I was just, when I got here, I was so broken and so beaten. I was so terrified of picking up that drink again. You know, it's just by God's grace that I'm standing up here with y'all today, because rocking along through all that, my alcoholism, you know, was progressing, and I picked up a lot of bad habits, you know, and somehow I had missed with in going through our steps with 10, 11, and 12, you know, and continuing to take that personal inventory. So I stayed on the periphery of things. I was just not drinking and going to meetings, okay? And I got in more and more and more trouble in my sobriety, okay? And my pride is my greatest character defect, you know, because I would listen to people and I would think that, well, you know, I hadn't had that experience. You know, that's not what's happened to me. But, you know, my pride didn't want me to go up to you and to say that. You know, I thought, if I just keep going the way I'm, it'll shift. It'll be all right. And, you know, I sponsored a lot of women. Oh, my God. It's just, you know, I know that there is a God and He's in charge, you know, because people stayed sober and doing great, doing a lot better than I was, you know. But they were getting on the right track. When, you know, when I found myself, I was about 13 years dry. I was so depressed, I was ready to blow my brains out, okay? I did not want to pick up a drink, but I wanted to pick up a gun and blow my brains out. I'm not going, you know, into everything throughout all those years that happened. Why I did not pick up a drink, you know, I do not know. But so what happened was I was suffering. I was in a severe depression. And I had been going to therapy, and I had been seeing a counselor, and this counselor sent me to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist diagnosed me, and he said, you know what, we need to get you on some antidepressants. And I thought, okay, well, you know what, I'm in AA, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and it's not working. And he prescribed medication for me. And I talked to my sponsor at the time, and she said, absolutely, you're depressed. I think you should take that medication. And so what happened was, I'm taking medication, and I'm sleeping like 18, 20 hours a day. I'm not functioning real well. And I'm going to the psychiatrist, and he's like, well, how you doing? I said, well, I'm not doing too good. And he said, well, we need to get your medications right. Well, what happened was I went through a big circle of medication. None of that ever worked. And it wasn't until I hit a turning point with that, and I said, oh, my God. And I woke up one morning, and I said, I need some help. This is not my solution, okay? And what happened was, through a series of speaker tapes, listening to speaker tapes, I got connected with some people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wound up moving, and I'm where I am now. And my sponsor that I have now, she started taking me through the big book. She said, I want you to buy a brand new big book. She said, I'm going to read, and you're going to listen, and I'm going to share with you exactly what's been going on and what's happened to you. Damon did a workshop on it yesterday. Self will run riot, you know, but the alcoholic usually doesn't think so. You know, extreme self will run riot. And I had been running and controlling my life for all those years. I had really never done that third step, not really, not like I have today. And, you know, it was only when, after going through the book and going through those steps exactly the way they're laid out, that I had an awakening like I have never had. And I have truly recovered from the disease of alcoholism. And there's been no comparison, you know, from that time to this. I mean, yeah, quantities, one thing, quality's another. You know, but so if, you know, if you're out there and you're not doing real good or you think something's not working, you know, I don't wait as long as I did. You know, ask somebody for help. You know, it's all laid out right here, step by step, exactly what to do, you know. You don't have to be an example of what not to do. Alcoholics Anonymous truly works. It's only through my constant thought of others and what I can do to help them and getting involved and having a sponsor that's louder than my head. You know, I've just recently become involved in service work. I mean, really at, you know, the area level and alternate, you know, DCM for our district, all those things, you know, that I just was not, for whatever reason, did not hear was brought into prior to, you know. It's unimaginable. You know, it's embarrassing the things that I've missed up to this point. But I figure I got a little time left, so y'all look out. And I just appreciate everything that everybody shared this weekend. Thank you for letting me be here with you. I appreciate it.